What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Fenway Faithful Podcast. It's your host, Moses Menendez, and today I'm riding solo as Dave's stuck in a phone booth. Oh, my God. Anyway, in real life stuff, me and Dave cannot meet up this week, guys. He's occupied dealing with prior arrangements he had going on, and he couldn't get to me. But, guys, don't worry, because the show must go on, and if there's a will, there's a way, and I had a plan in place. This plan has been going on for quite some time. We did a split podcast with our boys in Benny and the Betts podcast. Now, this is another Red Sox podcast, obviously Benny and the Betts. These are some awesome guys. I talk to these guys on a weekly basis about the Red Sox, and we've been trying to do this for a long time. They wanted me to come on their show. I wanted to come on my show. And today I said, hey, guys, why don't we just do a split podcast? And that's what the fuck we did. We did a split podcast. And today we talked about 2.0, spring training. We covered that. We covered COVID. Guys, give us a listen. Go to them a listen. Go over to their Facebook page, Benny and the Betts. I'll put it in the description below. And go give them a like. Give them a thumbs up. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at Fenway_Faithful_Sports. Check us out. Check out our website, FenwayFaithfulSports.com. New articles about the Red Sox come out every other week, written by yours truly and other sports writers. We have the Strongest Blog, written by Dr. Doom. And we're working on getting some writers for the Bruins and the Celtics and the Patriots, covering all Boston sports. Guys, make sure to check us out. Give us a like on Instagram. Give us a like on Facebook. Friend request is on our friend request page on Facebook. Let us know your thoughts. Today, I did drink some whiskey because I asked for all your ideas. And I went with Evan Williams. It was recommended to me last week by a listener. I don't have his name, but I shouted him out 2 weeks ago when I brought it up. Thank you. Evan Williams is a little different tasting. Kind of similar to Jim Beam. But hey, it's whiskey, and I appreciate you guys telling me what to drink. So that's what's in my cup during this podcast. And guys, before I get into the show, I know I'm rambling on here. Make sure, guys, if you want to be comfortable, and you want to look cool, and you want to have the sickest Boston gear out and be wicked awesome, go check out wickedpizza.com and make sure you use our code FFS15. Guys, they have the sickest gear out. They got 4th of July gear. They have face masks. And ladies, they got leggings for you and ladies' gear. They got hoodies. I had my Bruins V-neck on last week. I got my Fenway Faithful shirt on this week. A lot of comfortable stuff, guys. So go check out wickedpizza.com for all your gear today and give them a follow on Instagram. Now, guys, I'm done rambling, going on with the show. But before I forget, the most important thing, happy 4th of July. Enjoy America's birthday. It's America's birthday. We just celebrate it once a year. It's one of my favorite summer holidays of the year. It's one of my favorite holidays before Christmas, probably. It might be my favorite holiday. So make sure to enjoy 4th of July. Play this at your barbecue. Tell your friends put Fenway Faithful on at the barbecues. Show the world who Fenway Faithful is and enjoy the podcast. Enjoy the barbecue. And guys, eat a lot, drink a lot, but be responsible when you drink. Don't drink and drive. This isn't a paid plug. This is me telling you, don't drink and drive. Be responsible. Now, guys, we're going on to the show. Another shout out one more time to Betting the Best Podcasts. Go follow them on Facebook. Give us a follow on Instagram at Fenway Faithful Sports. And guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. And next week, we'll be back with Dave. And time to go to the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Betts podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. We are available on just every platform imaginable. We are downloaded in over 30 countries, and we are happy to have you with us for this episode. We will be covering a lot of what's going on right now, as we start spring training 2.0, summer camp, whatever you want to call it, everything from the virus to the pitching staff to some of our expectations going forward. Tonight, joining me, from the regular cast, Charlie Smith. Charlie, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me. Great to hear and see you as always.
Yeah, absolutely. We know we're that much closer to, opening day, barring Armageddon. So, like I said, we'll definitely be getting into it. Also joining us tonight is Moses Menendez from the Fenway Faithfuls podcast. We're actually doing a split show tonight, so their audience is hearing us right now, and you know, this show will be hearing him. So two shows going on at once. Never done it before. Why not? Moses, how are you?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Thanks for being on Fenway Faithful podcast. I appreciate you guys doing this. And it's going to be a lot of fun. This is the first time for everybody, so it's going to be a blast.
Absolutely. So diving right into it, we may as well start with the elephant in the room. You know, the virus is kind of picking up steam. I noticed they're talking a lot about an uptick in cases. What you don't see a lot in the media compared to 2-3 months ago is the rising death toll. That's just not happening right now. So maybe that's the good news in all of this, but there is, you know, an uptick of cases. Charlie, starting with you, what are your thoughts on the, you know, developments surrounding the virus, you know, since we last recorded?
Well, there are a couple of players that have opted out of their 2020 season. I know that Zimmerman was one. I do believe the most recent one to be vocal about it for more than one reason was Ian Desmond from the Rockies. I believe he opted out of his contract to spend time with his family. I feel like it's going to happen more and more. The thing is, it's not the superstar players of the teams that are doing it. So, I mean, we knew this was going to happen. It was inevitable. There are going to be some people that say, you know what? I'd rather sit at home and, you know, I'll forego $4 million or $3 million or whatever the prorated salary was going to be. And that's fine. You know, that's just one less person that people have to be worried about. That person doesn't have to worry at all either. They're going to be sitting with their wife, their kids, enjoying themselves. And that's fine too. You guys have made more than enough money to survive. You guys are good. That's cool. It is what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, luckily it is, you know, a bunch of older guys, you know, I hate to be brutal about this, but it's been a bunch of washed up 30 somethings that, you know,
that's really what it is, this older guy.
Yeah, their careers are pretty much over. You got Ryan Zimmerman, Ian Desmond, like you mentioned, Charlie, Mike Leake, Tyson Ross, and his younger brother, who I'm less familiar with, obviously.
Not a younger brother. Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. All right.
Tyson Ross's little brother is Joe Ross. He was a pitcher for the Nationals. He's actually in his upper 20s, and he was actually one of the surprise players to actually declare, "Yeah, I'm not gonna play." Tyson Ross was good for like 1 year in San Diego. Ian Desmond's like 35 or something. I don't know.
Yeah, he's pushing it.
He's pushing it too. But it's not the superstar player of these teams that are saying, you know what, no, it's not worth it. There are other players that are, you know, Ian Desmond, not the star player of the Rockies by a long shot. Is he a good player on the team? Yes. Is he the star? He's not Nolan Arenado, and he doesn't come close to that. He couldn't carry his jock, no way. But Ian Desmond also is speaking on behalf of more than one cause. So he's trying to make his voice known for that reason as well. That's fine. Am I going to be sad because Ian Desmond doesn't play this year? No. Am I going to miss Joe Ross or Tyson Ross this year? No. Am I going to miss Mike Leake for not playing this year? No. Like, no. If Mike Trout said, yeah, you know what, 2020, I'm just not going to do it, I'd be like, oh, shoot.
Then it's a real fail.
Then it's a fail.
Then it's a real thing. Ross's little brother, I mean, he's a bat boy. I don't know who that guy is.
Desmond was in line for a $100 million contract next season. You know, if he was a couple years younger, would he be opting out? It sounds like not. A stretch.
No. Same with Ryan Zimmerman. If he was 5 years younger, he'd be playing.
Yeah, Ian Desmond, I think he was in the middle of like a 5-year, $80 million deal. Something like it was something where he got like $10 million or something like that, but prorated, he was only going to make a fraction of that because they're doing prorated salaries and whatnot. So no, I don't think a player that was going to be getting $30 million would have opted out. There's just no way.
That's crazy.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts more in depth, Moses?
The COVID thing's been crazy, but we should have had baseball back about a month ago. And I think Manfred really
dropped the ball on this whole deal. You know, we should be having opening day on 4th of July. Spring training should have started on Memorial Day. There's nothing more American than that, having baseball start on one American date and start on America's birthday. I mean, it was he had the easiest route to save baseball and make it something, and he didn't. Obviously, COVID's real, and the numbers are kind of dying down in some areas. But all in all, he fucked up big time with these deals. It is what it is, right? Guys are opting out. You know guys are going to opt out. And like Charlie said, it's the guys you don't really know their names because they're bat boys. Like, up till 5 minutes, I didn't know Ross had a little brother. So it's it comes down to, I hate to say it, but it is what it is. But now the boys are back. They started reporting yesterday. Some of them showed up today. Let's get down to baseball. Let's get into this shit. You know, we got a 60-game season. Let's make the best of it. Hopefully the playoff format is reasonable. And we see the Red Sox win number 10.
Yeah, I mean, the surprising thing to me in the last 48 hours especially is a lot of local beat writers as well as big national beat writers as well, just Ken Rosenthal today even, throwing cold water on the chances of this season actually getting off the ground and getting into motion, you know, because of the challenges of the virus. But I'm just I don't think it's that bad, especially now, because like I said, the death toll just isn't there. A lot of it is younger people that are asymptomatic, and I think a lot of baseball players are going to fall into that.
Right.
There's also no known, you know, serious cases right now of, you know, COVID-19 among MLB players. You know, they've all been fairly mild, that we know about. And I just think it's super critical to get this season going and get the trial and error stuff out of the way. That way, when 2021 comes around, we know how to handle it. And if there's universal enthusiasm amongst executives, players, and fans all across the board, let there be baseball. So I hate the cold water getting thrown on it.
Yeah, I don't understand that neither. It's just, you know, we have a positive going. Stay with it. The country needs a positive to keep moving forward. You know, basketball put out their dates. Hockey put out their dates. Baseball has a date. So just keep going in the positives. And that's the biggest problem. That's why I think it took so long for this deal to come about. They're dwelling on the negativities of everything. The numbers are going down in deaths. The cases are going down. They should look ahead at 2021, but we still have 2020 to focus on.
You did bring up something earlier, though. Like, baseball could have started on America's birthday. The thing with Manfred, though, is he's been so hot and cold. He's like a walking knuckleball. You don't know which direction he's going to go in. Like, I remember he mentioned 4 or 5 weeks ago, he mentioned that, maybe it was less, I'm not sure, but he said that there was already a deal, and there was no deal at all. There was nothing. And it took the MLBPA to come out and say, you know what, that's actually not even true. Like, this is like 45 talking right now. This is actually complete fake news, not real. So that was an opportunity for everyone to, okay, cool, this is actually happening. When that happened, it was a slap in the face to baseball as a whole. Because when that happened, I sat there like, who's pulling the strings? Like, who's making the calls? Why are you saying, are you trying to like save face at this point? Because I have no idea why you're lying to us. Like, we're now, like, Terry, I remember last week, you're like, please, I just want to see a couple pitches, like a couple games of baseball. Bring baseball back. Like, we want to see it back, but we want to see it done the right way. If you really didn't have anything going, which you didn't, be transparent, because people were going to be more upset finding out that you said, oh yeah, we're good. And then there's nothing. That situation was handled so poorly. Manfred continues to lose support across the country because he can't get it done.
We call him man fraud on our show. He's just a fraud. He's just garbage.
Like,
he's
like
just
a
big fraud. And you know, all he did was lie throughout the whole thing. And it was, like you said, when that came out with the fake news, as a fan, not just a Red Sox fan, but a baseball fan in general, it just pissed me off. Like, that's just a slap in the face.
Yeah.
It's an insult. You know, and I think him lying slowed this down big time. He took the sides of the owners. They didn't want to pay, and they didn't want to play. And he didn't want a season, I believe, deep down. I don't think Manfrod wanted a season.
Manfrod, I love it.
I don't know. I mean, I just think he was bowing to the owners too much. I saw him have some comments, I think, on a New York radio show where he said that they were never going to agree to more than 60 games. Like, that was never in play from the get-go. But I just think from a survival perspective, there has to be baseball this year. And I think Manfred does know that. Because if you look at some of the minor leagues, I listened to Buster Olney yesterday, and apparently a lot of those teams are going to need government bailouts next year to keep things afloat. So I just think no baseball could be extremely detrimental to the short-term future of the game, at least.
Well, I don't want to go off a deep end, but Manfrod was trying to cut out 60 minor league affiliates this year. And then this hit, and now there's no minor league baseball. And this goes back to him dragging his feet on this. I believe deep down that he dragged his feet so there'd be no minor league baseball. So when those teams, if they don't get a government bailout, they're gone. Minor league baseball will be cut in half. And that's not fair to the local fans. You know, like, I'm from New Jersey, and we have 12 affiliate teams in the area. I didn't drive to any team. Phillies, Red Sox, even the Mets. A few other, the Bisons for the Blue Jays. I didn't drive all around and get it. And he wants to cut these teams out. So he wants to cut minor league baseball out already. I don't understand why he wants to get rid of minor league baseball. So I don't agree with anything going on in the minors right now. There should be one minor league team per system. So there's still games being played in the system.
I agree. And I just wonder with some of these Red Sox prospects, you know, Tanner Houck, Brian Mata, those guys are pitchers. Then you've got Tristan Casas and, you know, one or two other decent hitting prospects that just aren't going to get their reps this year. And how far is that going to set them back?
I mean, they're losing a year, really.
Yeah. And, you know, if you were hoping to get them next May or June, you know, I don't know if that timeline's realistic at this point.
And even if you're a pitcher, you know, like, Matt Moore, when he was in the Rays, and this goes back, I think, 2013, he made three starts, and then he pitched in the playoffs for him. There's nobody doing that this year. If you get a guy who goes down in September and you're playing in October, who are you going for the backup? Everybody's home on the couch. You don't have a 40-man roster. You don't have anybody coming to help you anymore. So it's going to be – it's almost like this season is the best team's not going to win. It's going to be a team that survives going to win.
That could be. That's a great observation. And I don't know. We'll get into it with the Red Sox rotation here in just a minute. Just one quick kind of, I thought it was funny, you know, and this is like the most Cushman thing ever. Yesterday, I was listening to Sean Doolittle express like intense concern that this season wouldn't start. He's a late inning reliever for the Nationals. And
it was the lead a lot for him.
Yeah, and so he had a lot of concerns, and I saw the video because Buster only tweeted it, and I retweeted it, excuse me, and I commented below. I said, he looks too scared to even record a strikeout, and then somebody responds to me with a question mark, and I said, well, you know, his head's not going to be in the game. You know, I'm talking about Doolittle still, and she goes, it's a female that's interacting with me, and she goes, and you felt the need to tell his wife this because why? And I'm like, oh, it's his wife. And I was typing out a half-ass apology and kind of what my rationale was. I felt, you know, a little stupid. And before I could even send the tweet, she blocked me.
We talked about that, how they're soft, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so I didn't know I was mouthing off to the guy's wife, but my observations are still, you know, what they were.
Her blocking must be huge. That's her husband. Because blew like 20 saves last year. He almost blew the playoffs for him. So her block list is probably 100 deep. So I wouldn't lose any sleep about it.
Yeah. Luckily, their starting rotation was just so good that, offset their bullpen. I mean, Scherzer was hurt, you know, most of September, and I thought, wow, you know, and he really turned it up. He wasn't good in the wild card game against the Brewers, but after that, he was phenomenal. Another thing, speaking of Scherzer, apparently there was some secret Sandlot camp going around. I saw that from The Athletic today. Scherzer, Verlander, Giancarlo Stanton were among many superstar players at this little Sandlot camp, this private little, you know, camp they were holding down somewhere in Florida. And so some of these guys are going to be ready to go right away.
Yeah, well, I know Trevor Bauer does a thing on YouTube, live pitchings. So he's in the middle of the desert and he's pitching to like hitters. He's been on it. A few of guys from the Reds have been on it. Eric Gagne pitched on it last week. Interesting stuff if you have time to go on YouTube. So he'll be looking good this year.
That's a person I don't miss, Eric Gagne. You know, Trevor Bauer, he's involved in a couple of Twitter feuds, one of which is with Curt Schilling. It's actually quite epic. If you have some time, that's worth a watch. That's worth a read, too.
I didn't know that. I'd have to check that out.
Oh, you got to check that one out.
Schilling blocked me, too. He was another guy. I got tagged into this little argument, and I was arguing with Curt Schilling, not knowing he was Curt Schilling, because his Twitter handle is @Garrig38. So how the hell am I supposed to know that's Curt Schilling?
Right.
I had to look Schilling up for some reason, and I couldn't find him. And then I realized that I was blocked. So must have been from whatever that was. But my list is getting longer, and I don't seek these guys out, too. So that's the funny thing.
That is funny.
Yeah. But anyway, so getting into some Red Sox related stuff here, Ron Renicki said a day or two ago that Nathan Eovaldi would be ready to start next week if the season, you know, were coming up that quick. So I guess that's kind of encouraging to hear.
Well, he was lights out in spring training. He was just unhittable, and I was excited to see him pitch.
It was a nice change from what we saw in the past. I mean, that's for darn sure. It'll be great to see him right the ship, because last year was such a disaster. Outside of, I feel like, that one game he pitched, I think it was against the Yankees. He went 6 innings, allowed 1 hit. Like, just not there. Just how in the world, Dave Dombrowski, did you give this man a 4-year, $60-plus million deal? What were you thinking?
They should have made him sit out after that elbow surgery last year.
Oh, that was just, it was brutal. Like, after the World Series, that's not the time to start delving out major contracts. You just don't do that. That was just stupid.
Well, what bothered me on that deal was, like, you dish out the money, but you don't do a physical, and then he throws 3 pitches in spring training. Like, oh, my elbow. Needed it scoped out. Huh?
Yeah.
Not
a good look.
Yeah. I mean, see, if this was a 162-game season, you know, he would be a 4th or 5th starter. I would expect him to go on the DL at some point. I have serious concerns as to whether or not that arm will hold up for more than 120 innings. He's had 2 Tommy John surgeries on it, 2 separate surgeries aside from that for loose bodies in his elbow, which, you know, one of which was last year, like you said. So, I mean, if we're looking at 162, I'd be an extreme pessimist about Eovaldi. You know, 60 games, the innings count will be down. In a short sample size, anybody can get hot. I mean, Wade Miley, like I said last week, could win the Cy Young this year, you know, if they still have that stuff on a short sample size. So, you know, it's just one of those situations where you just got to hope for the best, you know.
I think it's tailor-made for him, honestly.
Yeah, hopefully. You got any thoughts, Charlie?
No, I mean, you bring up some great points. Here's the thing about Nathan Eovaldi. We have a 60-game season. If he ends up getting injured and gets wrecked in this 60-game abridged season, I have no faith that he will last the next 2 years. None whatsoever. If he can survive this, he will maybe meet my expectations. But if he gets injured, all bets are off in 2021 and 2022. It will look like potentially Dave Dombrowski's second worst signing.
I agree with that. I think if he bombs this year, he'll be in the bullpen the next 2 years.
If it was 162, because they had to put him there last year, and then Sale went down, and they had to bring him back to the rotation, but they just didn't know what the hell to do with him last year. He was so bad for the most part.
Last year, when he came back, it was kind of like they wanted him to work in. That's all it was. And they just sort of sat him out, honestly. They wanted him to do his work in, but, you know, a pitcher needs confidence. I mean, he goes out there, and he gets shelled time after time after time. It ain't going to help the guy.
Yeah. So it'll just be interesting to – well, they're not going to get to face a lot of live batters because I think they're only looking at a few exhibition games right before the season starts. So it's going to be mostly workouts over these next few weeks. But, you know, he's essentially, I think, our number two. I don't know how Martin Perez fits in. He is a bona fide starter, so I think that's how he'll be handled.
I think the way it's going to look, you have Erod one, which is insane to think because last year Erod was your four. I think last year it was Sale, Price, Evaldi, Erod, and then fifth
was Porcello.
Porcello. I forgot about him. That nightmare.
The poor guy.
I mean, Jesus. And now you have Erod jumping into the pole position. Nate Evaldi is your two option. Your three option is Martin Perez, who is somebody's number five or six on another team. Like on a crappy team, he's a five or a six.
We're seeing he was a five on a 100-win team last year.
Here's the thing. Martin Perez started off like gangbusters last year. And then forgot where the plate was. It was terrible.
Because Brian Johnson.
I don't do that to me. You know not to. Oh, you don't know that. Not to
I don't
Brian
know.
Johnson.
I can't do it.
But Ryan Weber was someone that we talked about. I imagine he's going to be one of the guys. If he's not official, he should be. We know Sale's obviously done. Colin McHugh looks to be number five, unless they pick up somebody else.
Chris Mazza is going to be in the hunt, too. Chris Mazza has a good live arm. That was a good move from the Mets.
I
forgot about him, too. So Mazza could potentially be in there, too. But, I mean, McHugh is babying the arm, like he already mentioned,
I think he's going to be a reliever, honestly, McHugh.
I hope so. Because if he comes in as a starter, I mean, what he's already told everybody is, I'm babying my arm. If I start to feel a pinch or a little twinge, I'm not pitching. He literally told them, like, I'm listening to my body. I don't care what you say. If it hurts, I'm not pitching. So, okay, fine. You're on your own regiment, whatever. That's fine. Can I trust you to be the fifth starter? No, but again, Chris Mazza, I didn't think of him. Good call.
Yeah. I see it being Erod, Nathan, Perez, Mazza, and then I just see Weber as the fifth. Because Weber had good signs last year. This will be his second year. He had some time last year. He'd be a good fifth starter. It really is a toss-up for the fifth, but you know better who he's up against. Brian Johnson is trash. McHugh already seems like he's going to be in and out, so just keep him in the bullpen. It'd be a perfect fit for him.
Well, I saw a tweet today from one of the beat writers that had Erod number one, and then either Evaldi or Martin Perez two and three in some combination. And then Weber was listed fourth, and then Brian Johnson fifth. So, I mean, obviously that could change over the next several days. Colin McHugh had a non-surgical procedure done on his forearm because of a flexor strain. I have yet to see, and there might be one or two examples if you go back a number of years, but I've never seen anyone come back with a flexor tendon issue and didn't have Tommy John. Like, it's always inevitable. We knew that was going to happen with Chris Sale. Who was it?
Tanaka. Tanaka had that done.
Oh, he had the PRP injections, I think. Because he had a partial tear in UCL. Okay. I didn't know that. I know he did have a partial tear of the UCL, so that was an example, with PRP injections. But
yeah.
It just doesn't, for the most part, seem to work out. And you also, I'm not saying this is definitely a factor, but McHugh is going to be essentially pitching the rest of the year for free because he was advanced a certain amount of his contract. And then they're only being paid 60 games prorated at this point. He's just not getting paid. He actually would have owed money, but I guess there was a clause where that gets forgiven in a situation like this. So I don't know if that'll play a factor with McHugh, but you would think he would want to, play a part here and maybe boost his value for next year because he's only here on a 1-year deal. But, I just don't know what to think about him really at this point.
Yeah, once the elbow gets involved in the flexor, you're right. It's inedible. You're not at the surgery. I don't know why he's even – but if I was a pitcher and I had that option, I'm getting it done on a season like this. It's a lost season.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think we had quite gone into virus mode when he had signed that, but it's a mess. My expectations for him are pretty low. Another thing as well, Bloom said that there would definitely be an opener used. So he didn't elaborate, if that's every game, if it's maybe just the Weber, Johnson, and maybe Mazza starts.
Yeah, maybe.
I have no idea, but a couple of guys to possibly look at if that's going to happen is Kyle Hart. Last year in 9 starts with AA Portland, he had a 2.91 ERA. Got called up to Pawtucket, started 15 there, had a 3.86 ERA in AAA. So those numbers definitely look, opener worthy, maybe long relief type stuff. He hasn't, he didn't pitch in the big leagues last year. So, it's tough to tell. Matt Hall as well, 16 games last season, had a 7.71 ERA, 5 games, and those might have even been in the bullpen, actually, those 16 games, 5 games in 2018, 14.63 ERA. So that was a Bloom move, one of the earlier ones. Hall comes from the Detroit system, so I don't know what Bloom sees there, but obviously there was a little bit of genius with, some of those Tampa starters or pitchers, I should say. So
the small moves like Chris Mazza, I'm not against, as Chaim Bloom has that eye for small talent. So when you see moves like that, I get a little excited because it's something new. It's not we're going to buy a big name. We're going to go with the smaller name talent.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I was happy with the fact that they, replaced, Dombrowski with him. I was kind of hoping they would look at Tampa, maybe look at Houston. This was before the, the bombshell Athletic reports came out. But, yeah, and maybe even the Dodgers organization. I mean, those are 3 teams that just seem to have it figured out.
I thought the guy from the Dodgers was definitely a lot for the GM. I forget his name. It was so long
Friedman.
Ago. Yeah. Andrew
Friedman. See, I mean, there has to be an allure with, being the GM or president of baseball ops for the Red Sox. Like, there's this romantic allure about it. But if you look at what Friedman's done with the Dodgers, that system has a very balanced payroll right now with some spending flexibility. They've got some talented prospects coming up. I think Walker Buehler is going to be an absolute stud for the next decade. So, I mean, it took a lot of work to get that team to that point. So, it was like, does he really want to walk away from that when it's like at its peak right now and they can really do some damage? So, I wasn't shocked when he ended up signing, his extension. But nonetheless, I'm glad, Bloom ended up being the candidate. Hard to believe Bloom was the runner-up to Brody Van Wagenen in the Mets, who had no baseball experience whatsoever, other than the fact he was an agent, never an executive.
I'm happy they dodged that bullet.
Buehler, you know, it's funny you brought him up earlier too. Buehler was an interesting situation because he was an injury recovery story. Most people forgot about that, but he ended up making a major comeback because he was injured for the longest time. He ended up having shoulder surgery, I believe, and then he ended up throwing harder after surgery, which was weird because usually most people don't throw harder after it. He ended up getting better after surgery.
Yeah, he's a rare breed.
Yeah, and he's a machine.
And he was not on the draft radar after he got hurt, so they saw something in him that nobody else did.
Yep. He's a kid, too. He's like 24 or 25, something like that. He's a stud.
I wasn't familiar with his injury history. I mean, he kind of rose up in the 2018 season, and a lot of Red Sox fans forget he was the starting pitcher for the Dodgers in that epic 18-inning, you know, game three where Evaldi, you know, also was a hero. So, you know, pitched very well, you know, in a big game, and, you know, the Red Sox came back to send it in extra innings. But if he can stay healthy, he's certainly, going to be a stud.
Mm-hmm.
Any other pitching? We're going to get to Luke Roy in a minute, but is there anything I left out as far as the pitching went?
You covered a lot. I mean, it's going to be interesting because there's a lot of small-name players, and it's going to be exciting to watch, like we said, because a lot of guys be in a minor league roster going into the year. And there's going to be a lot of opportunity, and it could be a good thing, it could be a bad thing. But
absolutely. So, Charlie, what do you make of Luke Roy being added up into the player pool right now for the Red Sox? I guess that stands at 48 at the moment, so he'll be coming into camp, and he'll be competing against Kevin Plawecki, and I'm going to boldly assume Christian Vasquez has nothing to worry about. So,
yeah,
him fitting in.
So here's the thing. Like, I'm glad you brought up Luke Roy. And the fun thing about Luke Roy is when I think of him, I think of Grandpa Ross when he was a member of the Sox last year. This is what it was back, because David Ross actually, when he came to Boston in 2013, sorry. When he came to the Red Sox, that was his second stint. He actually came the year after the Red Sox won the World Series, and he didn't do anything. Like, he had, like, maybe one hit, something, like, menial. And then he left, and then he came back on, like, I'm going to serve as the backup, but not really just a backup role. So he was going to be a mentor, a leader in the clubhouse, and kind of really get that role a little bit of meaning. Last year, we had, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We had 8 guys hit almost 20 home runs or more. So we had 6 of 20 or more. Michael Chavis and then Mitch Moreland were the only guys that didn't crack the 20 number. You had Christian Vasquez, who's going to be your starting catcher this year, who had 23. You had Bradley with 21. Betts, 29. He's gone. J.D. Martinez, 36. Bogey with 33. Devers with 32. I'm not expecting Jonathan Lucroy to come in and do crazy work. But what I am expecting him to do is become a great leader. When David Ross came to Boston, he hit 216, hit 4 homers, 10 RBIs, a stolen base, got a couple of runs. We don't know what he's going to do this year. But the year prior to joining the new team to be that leader, their numbers are very, very similar. So I'm hoping that Luke Roy can do what David Ross was able to do back in 2013. And yes, it's just an abridged season. Who knows what's going to happen? I personally would rather have Luke Roy than Plawecki on my team.
Plawecki is a hard ground ball to short. That's all he is. And going back to Chavis and Moreland, they were both hurt too, don't forget. So they didn't really get a fair shot at the 20 home runs last year.
I was there. So Terry already knows this. I actually was there when Michael Chavis hit his first career home run. So I will forever be immortalized in
that's awesome.
Red Sox video history. Yeah, I can Google that home run. I see myself.
Yeah, you're right. That's behind awesome. Yeah, with Luke Roy here, I'll have a Chavis comment in a second. But basically, I'm just looking for a guy who can handle the pitching staff similar to how Leon did. We knew Leon wouldn't have a good bat for the most part. He had, like, one nice, you know, power streak per year where, you know, he'd have a good week or two and could mash, you know, if he could barrel up the ball. But Leon just, it seemed like certain guys in the pitching staff were just better with him catching. You know, Rick Porcello was a good one. David Price in 2018 started the year with Vasquez, wasn't pitching great, switched to Leon, pitched fairly well down the stretch. And, you know, if Lucroy ends up being that guy that can maybe work with Ryan Weber really well, you know, then I'm all for it. And that'll be good enough for me. And if there's, you know, production with the bat, that's a big bonus. In 2018, Lucroy played 126 games with the Oakland A's, who were, I think, a 97-win team that year. And he was handling a pitching staff that on paper didn't look very sexy. You know, Edwin Jackson was one of them.
A lot of openers, too.
Yeah, I wished I would have looked up their rotation because a lot of their names escape me right now. But it was basically a rotation with a bunch of number four guys at best, because Minaya went on the DL shortly after pitching that no-hitter against the Red Sox with a shoulder issue. And you know, so that could be, you know, a little bit of an indication that maybe Lucroy does work well. But I haven't seen a lot from Plawecki, so I can't really make, you know, any type of judgments there. But if he can have that same effect, then, you know, I hope he wins the job. So I'm just looking for some of, you know, that Sandy Leon type stability when it comes to game calling, because he was phenomenal.
Yeah, and everybody knows that's where Vasquez lacks, is the defensive side of calling a game.
Wait, say that again?
You know, that's where a lot of – that's Vasquez's down point, is calling a game. In 18, Price switched him out. Sale wouldn't pitch to him. You know, if Sale was healthy and Price was here, and Porcello was here, half your pitching staff won't pitch to him. So
– exactly. And Sale is probably – you know, I know he's finicky in the second half of the season, and, you know, he's dealing with Tommy John right now, but when he's healthy – he's one of the most talented pitchers of his era. So when he won't pitch to Christian Vasquez, that's pretty telling.
Right, right. And that guy, he's, like you said, he's electric when he's healthy. So, right. But Lucky did deal with Syndergaard, Mats, the Drum, Harvey, Wheeler, the best pitching staff to never win anything. That's what a lot of people said.
Yeah, I forgot he was with the Mets. He just came from Cleveland, but yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, that was a pitching rotation with the Mets that you thought could be World Series caliber, and they just completely underachieved every year. Yeah, absolutely. And then they had a dumpster fire situation with what's his name there from the Astros, Beltran, and just, it seems like that organization is just a huge dumpster fire. Like, they should literally burn their stadium down and then rebuild. Like, I think that needs to be part of the, you know, their rebuild process to finally get things going. Because I don't think Van Wagenen is the guy who's going to turn that organization around. That Luis Rojas, I've read nothing but good things about him. You know, he got hired after they awkwardly got rid of Beltran. So we'll see. I don't hate the Mets. You know, I wish they were the best team in New York, because that would, you know, kill the Yankees. But yeah. So anyway, real quick, just on Chavis, like, what is he? I like him. I like his energy. He's got a very good positive vibe. He's always goofing off, you know, on social media. I like that. I think that's good for the team. But it just seems like he could be Chris Davis on the Orioles 2.0 and just completely have a dud season, yeah, with millions of strikeouts. He could be Chris Davis on the A's and hit for about 250 and mash 40 bombs a year. I could see that. And I think his ceiling is probably a Kevin Youkilis type guy. And that might be a reach right now, but I think that probably is his ceiling. So, like, what is he to you guys?
I think he you know, we won't know until another 2 seasons what the season is. But I think we can't really judge him. That we had such a small sample last year, and he was really good when he was healthy. So I need to see more of him. But I'm excited to watch him, and I think he's just a replacement for Pedroia now. That's all I think.
You don't think that Peraza kid from Cincinnati will?
Oh, Terry, stop it. No way. Absolutely not. Now, I'm a little biased because I did get to see him play. I'll admit I was a little I was kind of jumping on the MC bandwagon because when he came and he hit so hard, so well, so quickly, it was like, Dustin, who? We don't need you anymore. Just retire. Hang up the cleats. Don't worry. We got a guy who can field and, you know, do what you can't do, which is hit the ball and stay healthy. That's the big deal. But then we kind of saw a little bit of regression. We saw this like 330, 340 batting average drop to 250. So you don't drop to 250 by hitting 250. You drop to 250 because you're hitting 200.
Right.
So there was a major bit of regression there. But you know what? Freshman year, this is your first shot at the show. There's sometimes sophomore slump. Who knows if he gets a little bit better? There have been players out there that people have lauded as superstars. Aaron Judge was one of them, but he was during the, you know, potential their cameras in center field issue year. And he didn't really do diddly squat year two. It was a fraction of his campaign. So if Michael Chavis does what he does in 2021, what he did in 2019, I will take that as a bit of a growing year, because I'm not expecting him to hit more than maybe 6-7 home runs this year, if we're lucky, you know? So I can't count him out. I really hope he doesn't just become a Kevin Youkilis type journeyman. I especially hope he doesn't hold the bat the way he does, because that was just sinful. I'd like to say that he's going to buck the trend and be – I'll do this. I'll say this, Terry. He'll be better than Youkilis, maybe not as good as Pedroia, just to make you happy.
Well, even with Pedroia's bad 4 years on healthy, he's still a career 300 hitter.
Yeah.
You know, that's hard to do. And if he wasn't hurt, I think – if you go back before his injuries, he was career like 320. So that's hard. I don't think we can really count this year against him. I think that has to be in 2 years. This 60 games, remember, 60 games. So he's going to play maybe 52 of them, 50. So it's hard to judge these numbers off of what he could be. He'd be really good, right? He'd have a good 50 games and be a 480 hitter. Or he didn't struggle, be a 200 hitter in a 160 game year, but only bat like 140, 150. So this year could hurt him or help him because of the lack of games.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Or go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, no, I'm just agreeing. I say good point, yeah.
See, last season, he didn't come up right away because they were worried about his you know, poor defense on the corners. They thought he just needed more reps and, you know, in Pawtucket and, you know, then they would call him up. And the day before he got called up, they were still saying he wasn't ready. But then Nunez and Holt went on the DL like a day apart. And then Pedroia, that whole experiment had failed, you know, last year. And then they had no choice but to call him up. And then they threw him at second, where he had never really played and was more than adequate. And I think he could be potentially a corner outfielder if they need to, you know, especially left field. I mean, you know, so it wouldn't surprise me to see some reps out there, if not during the regular season, maybe next spring training. But his versatility definitely surprised me. And I'm rooting for him. Like I said, I like him.
I'm a big fan of him, yeah.
So here's the thing, though. When we look at what Dustin Pedroia did, if we look into or take into account the last, you know, 3 years, because the last 2 years he played 9 games, he had 3 hits and he had 34 at-bats. He hit under 100. That's terrible. He had 7 homers, 63 RBIs, 122 hits, in 114 games. Michael Chavis played 95 games, some of which did not even start. He was just pinch hitting. He had 18 home runs, more than twice that, and almost the same number of RBIs, 58, as opposed to 62. He didn't walk as much. He struck out a heck of a lot more. But, I mean, the bat is there. Can the fielding get better? I think it can.
I think so. Give him time. Let him learn the position more.
I agree. Okay. Yeah, give him a chance.
Last topic before we wrap. Here's a question, and I posed this on Twitter. Not a lot of people really jumped on it. I don't think people are really in the swing of things just yet anyway. But here's a question for you guys. If Ron Renicki somehow gets this team into the playoffs, even if it's just the wild card, and because I'm certainly not expecting them to. I mean, on paper, this isn't, you know, a playoff team. But if it happens, if there's some magic with Renicki, with maybe some magic from Bloom sprinkled in, does he get a contract extension for next season and maybe the season after? Because this is the only year of his deal.
Who is that, Renicki?
Yeah, Renicki. So do you extend him if we get into the playoffs?
I'll go first. So we actually have a movement on our podcast. It's called the MC. We believe Mookie, Cora, and Lester are all coming back next year. We think Mookie's going to sign a blockbuster deal. Cora's already talking about he can't wait to be a manager again. And Lester wants to play for Boston again. So, and Renicki already has come out and said he doesn't have plans of long-term managing in the league. So I think Renicki's a one-year deal. I wouldn't count him out of anything because in 60 games, anything could happen. This team that messed around and go 48-12. And they also go 12-48 real fast. You don't know what you're going to get. But I think we're going to see Cora and Fenway managing the Red Sox 2021 or 2022.
We covered this last week, and I think all but – there's five of us that co-host this show – and four out of the five are pretty adamant that Cora won't be back. And okay. If you listen to Bloom's statements, he throws a lot of cold water on it and says he stands by the decision to move on from him. And I just think if you bring Cora back, every misdemeanor offense that we might get caught up in, some stupid minor bullshit, is going to get blown up into a felony. And, you know, I don't think Bloom wants to put himself in a position to get suspended like Lunau did. And I think Lunau was definitely with the Astros dirtier than, you know, what he admitted to. But it's an extreme long shot that Cora comes back. I think if they don't stick with Renicki, it'll be Matt Quatrero, the Tampa Bay's bench coach.
Okay, so you think he's going to go Tampa? He's going to do that pipeline to Tampa?
Possibly, yeah. I don't know who else would be available. I don't think he would go after a Buck Showalter type guy. Or
No. He won't fit. He won't fit in.
Yeah. Yeah, but I just think it's a long shot right now for Cora.
Do you think you just see a Veritek coming in to manage in 2 years?
Well, that's the, you know, the thing that people clamor for, and I'd kind of like to see him do a full season as like a bench coach type thing before he does get elevated, you know, to that role. But
I was at the winter weekend when Cora quit, and Veritek was the biggest talk of the whole weekend, and they were swearing he was the next coach. So I just, you know, I never thought of him as a coach, honestly. But well, he should definitely be like a bench coach, kind of like Cora did.
Yeah, he's some type of consultant right now, but you did see him, if you were looking for him, in the dugout during games in uniform last season. So it just depends on Bloom. You know, every GM or whatever his title is, they all have fancy titles nowadays, but all of them guys have one manager, two tops to kind of make their career, you know, with their franchise, and, you know, and then usually they get fired, you know? So You know, Dombrowski had his too. Epstein had Francona the whole time, but you know, Sherrington had two managers under him, and so it just depends, you know, on Bloom, I guess. I'll also say this though, I hate seeing teams get too heavy with the analytics and sabermetrics. I kind of like the idea that the manager calls the shots. Ideally, they would be open to the, you know, the analytics and everything, but I hate it when the front office is the be all and end all about that. I kind of liked the fact that Cora, you know, you could tell he was the manager of the team, and, you know, Joe Girardi, you know, was throughout his Yankees tenure, and Francona always has been. So, you know, I hope that we do, you know, we do have a manager that at least carries the most influence. But going back to my original question, though, I think it would be amazing if the Red Sox did get into the playoffs. And if, you know, if Renicky, if they thrive off of Renicky, I wouldn't mind seeing him come into it.
I'm a Ron Renicky guy. I was big on him in Milwaukee in 07 when they had Ben Sheets and CeCe and all of them. I mean, that was exciting to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, look at the Braves with Brian Snitker. He was an interim guy to finish out the season after Freddy Gonzalez got fired. And ever since being the manager, I think he's had two full seasons, and they've gotten into the playoffs both times. And they had that epic meltdown in game 5 in the first inning against the Cardinals. But I mean, they were looking like they could possibly be in the NLCS last year. So, and he's an older guy like Renicky as well. So, you know, I like seeing stories like that. And, you know, go back to Lovello. I mean, he was the bench coach of the Red Sox, and then John Farrell went on that cancer leave. The Red Sox were the best team in baseball in August and September of that year. And, you know, unfortunately, the damage was done before that. And, you know, we weren't a playoff team, but that team was so fun to watch under Lovello. I mean, Jackie Bradley went on an absolute tear, you know, with Lovello. Never went back to the minors after that either. Joe Kelly was 8-0 as a starter that final stretch of the year, with Blake Swihart catching him, no less, you know. So I just, if the team responds, I'm totally good with Renicky, you know, being the guy, but I have no idea what the front office, you know, is thinking right now.
You never know in baseball. Like, you go back to the statistics and the numbers, you never know. And I think the coach you're looking for, the shoot from the hip coach, like the Cora, there's not a lot of them left anymore. And I think Renicky is one of the last of the dying breeds. You know, even the guy in LA, Roberts, he was all numbers. And you know about the game when Eduardo Nunez hit that home run. He went lefty versus righty. He went curveball against this guy. He wasn't going to hit him, and they beat him. And you can't go. The game is played by man. You have to be called by man. That's why I don't agree with these robotic umpires. I don't agree with statistics. Let the pitcher face the hitter. And go on your gut. It's a game. It's a game of feeling. You have to go by feeling.
Renicky will end up being back, I think, next year, no matter what. I don't think the Red Sox are going to can a guy after not even getting a full opportunity, like a real chance to prove himself. 60 games, you can't even, that's not even half the season. You got to give this guy a full year, give him a full squad, because he's also not, he also has, I mean, LOL to the rotation. And he's expected to get like 30 wins out of that. Like, give me a break. If this was a full season, he'd be lucky to get 50, maybe 54 wins. This it was not a 60 win team even in a full season. That just wasn't going to happen. So I think you got to give him 2021, maybe 2022, and then you just kind of play it by ear from there. Because yes, he is one of the last of a dying breed manager of that era. Because now you have these new generation guys. You have the Joe Girardis that are coming in. You have the Gabe Kaplers that I'm still trying to understand how he's managing, but he's got a job. You have, you know, for the longest time, you had Tony La Russa, Bobby Cox, Dusty Baker, you know, oh God, the guy from the Nationals, what's his name? Davey Johnson, like all of these guys that were 60, 70, 80 years old that were around.
Baker's back in the league, man. He's in Houston. You know,
who's this?
Dusty Baker.
Baker's back, right? But he's been around for a lot. I mean, Baker's been in San Francisco. He's been in Chicago. He doesn't discriminate. He doesn't care. He loves baseball. Like, he's wonderful like that. But here's the thing. Remember when they were the names and the young – I mean, some of the younger managers were like the Red Sox manager. We had like Joe Kerrigan after Jimmy Williams. Like, he was in his 50s. He's 30 years younger than some of the older managers. Those were the managers that I remember as a kid. Managers were always 70 years old that were around during the time of Jesus. You know, these guys knew exactly what was coming in baseball. They didn't need cameras or any BS going on. Renicky, I think, is going to be one of the last ones of that era. Again, because you have a whole new wave coming in, it's going to change. Eventually, Renicky won't be coaching anymore. And, you know, you're going to have Joe Girardi as the longest tenured manager in baseball. It's going to happen, something like that. I miss seeing some of those managers go off. Like, I would pay good money to see Bobby Cox go off one more time in my life, because that man was, I mean, you just, he was awesome. He was Atlanta baseball.
I agree. Him, Lou Piniella, another one who would go off.
Oh, Lou. Sweet Lou.
You mentioned Dave Roberts Moses, and he was a perfect example of a guy who's a manager in name only, because the front office, you know, is too analytical. And
that's why Mattingly's not there anymore.
Who's not there?
Mattingly.
Don, yeah, Mattingly.
He's in Miami. He was in LA before him, and they threw him out because he wanted to play by their system. He went on his gut. He wanted to manage his style.
He wanted a new contract, and he said he didn't want to be a coach in a lame duck year. So he said, I'm out if you don't give me a new deal.
Yeah, he wanted to coach his team.
I know the Astros, you know, obviously cheated that season, and there was evidence of it in the World Series. But, you know, I think the Dodgers lost the World Series in Game 7 when they went with Darvish and not Alex Wood, who took a no-hitter into the 7th inning of Game 4. You know, they could have just started Wood for 3 innings, knowing that Kershaw was coming in for 2 or 3 innings, and then they could have split it up between Morrow and Jansen and maybe won Game 7. But the analytics mindset that they embrace so hardcore, I think, bit them and, you know, potentially cost them a championship. So that's why I hate to see it embraced to that level.
And then they did it the following year with the Red Sox and Nunez is at bat and other plays in 18. You know, they just follow it too much. You gotta shoot from the hip. You gotta have that gut feeling how to play the game.
Absolutely. All right, you know, that's about all I had. Any final thoughts before we wrap?
I'm good. You know, I think we're going to be surprised by the team this year. I think this is going to be a year we see who Chaim Bloom really is. I'm interested in all his moves. It's going to be there's going to be two things, a really good-looking year, a really ugly-looking year. But I'm just excited baseball is back, finally. I don't know about you guys.
Hey, Terry.
Yeah?
We're going to have baseball in 2020.
Hopefully. You know, if you listen to Dr. Fauci, you know, we're all going to be dead in a couple months. But, yeah, I mean, hopefully. And I think the more other sports see baseball kind of treading water and, you know, staying above the surface, I think that will give them more hope, you know, especially the NFL. And, you know, they'll kind of get running and, you know, America needs their sports. So, you know,
right.
I'd hate to see the plug get pulled here. And you know, it's day to day, hour to hour, just watching the news reports and listen to all the gloom and doom they've been giving us. But, so we'll see. You know, and one thing we didn't talk about was the team isn't allowed to reveal who tests positive for it, so that's going to be hard to gauge in you know, spring training 2.0. But it's not like we can hide Rafael Devers, you know, if he's been for a couple of weeks. The Yankees can't hide Aaron Judge, so we're kind of gonna know. I guess the league can release the overall statistics and say, okay, this number of players tested positive today across the league. So that's something we can watch for. And if that number stays low, there should be baseball.
I agree. Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Great show. Glad we could have you on, Moses.
Thanks for helping me out, guys.
Yeah, thanks for joining.
Your audience enjoys it as well. So have a good night.
Take care, guys.
Night.